Good morning. Today's Daf and Sukkah's Lamed Aleph. We start with the Mishnah Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis, continuing with the Daf Minim. We're up to the Arava. Since the beginning of the Perek, starting on Chav Tes, we started with the Lulav. Spent about 3 days on all the details, both the qualifications and disqualifications of the Lulav. Then we moved to Hadassim. Only spent 1 day with the Hadas. That was yesterday's Daf Lamed Gimel. Today's Daf, not even a full Daf dedicated to the Arava. Mirz Hashem, this morning we're going to be doing two Mishnayos, one on the Amud Alf and one on the Amud Beis. We're going to end today with the Esrog. We're not going to do Esrog today, and we'll save our Esrog discussion till tomorrow, which is going to be the upcoming Mishnah on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, second Mishnah on the Amud. Let's get underway. I've been highlighting this Rashi already numerous times, but here's the Rashi right here on this Mishnah. So Rashi points out that there are universal disqualifications and then there are specific disqualifications, which is the reason why the Mishnayos treat each one of the Dalaminim separately, right? The Dalaminim are all integral towards the mitzvah of Dalaminim, meaning to say that you need all four. And so the truth of the matter is that in principle, we would like to have written all these Minim in one Mishnah, but each one of the Minim is a different species and they have unique characteristics, which means that they have unique disqualifications amongst all four of them, which is why the Mishnah segregated each one of the Minim to its own Mishnah, and because the Mishnah wanted to highlight not only the universal disqualifications, but also the specific ones as well, right? By the Hadassim, so we had the Berry issue. By the Arava, which we're going to learn about in just a moment, so there are There's something specific about the Arava, which we're going to highlight in just a moment in our Mishnah. By the Lulav, we have Tzinei Har Barzel, etc., etc. And of course, the Esrog is the most unique of all the Dalaminim because the Esrog represents an actual fruit. The other of the Dalaminim are just simply stalks, leaves, and not fruit. So for that reason, each one of the Minim gets its own Mishnah. So without further ado, that Rashi is right here in our Mishnah. So, okay, good. I've been highlighting that Rashi already numerous times. We begin with the Mishnah. Arava gzula v'yavesha psula. So as far as a stolen or a dry Arava, it would be psula. Shel asher v'shel nidach is psula. If the Arava comes either from an asherah tree or an ira nidach, it would be pasul. So as we've been repeating already a couple of times, this is now the third time that we're making this point, that by the asherah, by the ira nidach, it needs to be burnt. Since it needs to be burnt, therefore, we view it now currently as if it is already burnt. Therefore, kesuse mechta shiure, it doesn't have the requisite shear. Remember, by the Hadassim and Arava, it has to be 3 tvachim. By the Lulav, it needs to be 4 tvachim. So it doesn't have the shear. Therefore, it would be pasul. Niktam rosho nifritzu alav. So if the head of the Arava is clipped off, or if the leaves are broken off of the stem, and you kind of just taped it back on, so that would be pasul. Hatsaftzefa psula. So here now we approach a unique aspect of the Arava that is not the case by the other of the Minim, and that is the Tzavtzafa. Tzavtzafa is another type of willow. It's a variant willow, and the Mishnah says that it would be possible for reasons which we're going to articulate in the Gemara. Kemusha v'shenishru mixas alea v'shal baal kshera. Now if it's just a little bit withered up, or if some of the leaves have fallen off, or if it comes from a field that is that does not need irrigation. The field is only getting its water supply by the rain. So, and you have willows growing in such a field. The Mishnah is telling us that even though it is not growing necessarily by a water source, nevertheless, it would be kosher. Good. Okay, so a lot of details as we just related towards the Arava. The Gemara starts off the discussion. Tana Rabbanan Arve Nachal. So again, we've done this already 2 times before. We get to do this now again, and that is that we're going to go from the Lashon HaTorah to the Lashon Chachamim. The Torah over here, this is the one occasion where the Lashon HaTorah is pretty much correlated. It is the Lashon Chachamim, meaning the Torah's description of the Aravos is Arve Nachal. That's the only time where there's a match. Right, by the Lulav, the Lashon HaMishnah is Lulav, and the Lashon HaTorah is Kapos Tamarim. By the Esrog, the Lashon HaMishnah is Esrog, the Lashon HaTorah is Priyetz Hadar. And by the Hadassim, Lashon HaMishnah is Hadassim, and the Lashon HaTorah is Anaf Eitz Avos. So here we have a match. The Torah actually says the words Aravos. Actually, Arve Nachal. So Tan Rabbanan Arve Nachal Gedelam Al Nachal. So it has to be growing by a nachal. It has to be growing by a water source, a valley, literally. Davar Acher, another drasha, Arve Nachal Sha'ala Shala Mashoch Kenachal. Also, Arve Nachal allows us to identify the shape of the leaf. The leaf has to be elongated, just like a river. Tanya Idach and another Raisa, Arve Nachal, Ein Li'ala Arve Nachal. So that only tells me that if it grows at a water source, or right by a water source, it would be kasher. Shabbat v'shal hariminayin. How do I know that if my Arava is growing, not by a Nachal, but rather it's growing on an unirrigated field, or it's growing on the mountains? So how do I know that such a Arava would be kasher? Tamalomar Arve Nachal mikol makom. The Torah uses the word Arve in the plural. Since it uses it in the plural, it incorporates not only the species that grow by the water source, by the river, but even one that grow in other places as well. Abishal Omer, as we are now on the top of Lamadal Madalev. So Shitas Abishal Arve Shtayim. So the fact that it says the Belashan Rabim is there to teach us about two mitzvahs. What are their two mitzvahs by the Arava? So Achas Olulav, Achas Amikdash. One is to tell me about the mitzvah of Arava as it relates to the lulav, meaning dalaminim. And the second one is for the base of Mikdash. So we're going to be learning later in a Masechta, right, Daf Memhei, that there is a mitzvah called Arava. The mitzvah of Arava is to encircle the Mizbech with Aravos. We're going to be describing that later on. And where can that mitzvah be found in the Torah? The answer is it's not found in the Torah, right? We have a couple of mitzvahs as it relates to Sukkah that are simply not found in the Torah. So the other one we're going to be introduced to in just a moment. So, but according to Abba Shaul, it actually can be found in the Torah. It's encrypted. You're not going to see it, but it's encrypted in the Torah by virtue of the fact that it says Arve Nach on the plural. So that tells me that by Aravos, there's a dual mitzvah by the Arava. So one is for the Lulav, the, what you and I could describe as Dal Minim, and the other one is for the Beis HaMikdash. That's the Lahakif Es HaMizbech, to encircle the Mizbech with Aravos. Again, we're going to be describing that later. So according to Abba Shaul, so we learned that actually from the pasuk itself. Now, granted, by the way, that if you and I had a chumash and we were given pretty much the rest of our lives, we wouldn't be seeing this in the pasukim. Meaning, from the word Arve Nachal, there's just simply not enough information in the Torah that would have gotten to that point. But according to Abba Shaul, the actual source of the mitzvah is actually based in the Torah. Even though, obviously, even according to Abba Shaul, we still need a Torah Shabbat Peh to outline and to detail this mitzvah. But nevertheless, it's actually sourced in the Torah. Now, v'rabbanan lemikdash menalahu. Now, according to the Chachamim, they don't agree. Meaning, for them, Arve Nachal is to be used for the drushas that we saw at the beginning of the sugya, right? That even if it grows in other locations, if it's growing in a stay ba'al, if it's growing in the mountains, so they already used up the drusha of Arve Nachal. So according to the Chachamim, how do the Chachamim know that there's a mitzvah of Arava Lemikdash? V'rabbanan Lemikdash Menaluhu Chusur Gemir Luhu. So according to the Chachamim, Talach LaMoshe MiSinai, it's that simple. Meaning there's simply no source in the Torah whatsoever, and it's just simply part and parcel. Torah Shabbat Peh, it's part of the Halach LaMoshe MiSinai. I'm Rav Asi, I'm Rav Yochanan. So now in our Masechta, there are going to be two groupings of Halach LaMoshe MiSinai. So one we saw earlier in the Masechta, that was Shi'urin, Chatzitzin, Umechitza. And this is now going to be our second grouping. It happens to be a grouping of three of Halach LaMoshe MiSinai, meaning halachas that we will not encounter in the Torah, but nevertheless, it's part of our Masorah, part of Halach LaMoshe MiSinai. So, Es and Atiyah, Zarav of Nisar Chamayim, Halach LaMoshe MiSinai. So there are three Halach LaMoshe MiSinai, and Rashi points out over here that this is the Shmua. This is just simply the transmission of the Masorah. Just like Shiur, Mechitza, and Chatzitza, is grouped together. So too over here, Eser Netiyos, Arav, and Nisar Chamayim, these three Halach LaMoshe MiSinais are grouped together. It could be that there's some common denominator, common thread that links these three together, although you're going to have to be a little bit creative in order to come up with it. And as I go and explain briefly each one of them, it will be challenging to link them together. But Rashi says that may not just simply be necessary. It could just simply be that this is the way that we have the Masorah, that these three are grouped together. But it's pretty fair to speculate that if they're grouped together, there's a reason why they're grouped together, and there must be some sort of connective tissue, but Rashi over here does not go out and spell out what exactly is a connective tissue. Meanwhile, let's just quickly run through these three halachas. Again, the Gemara over here is bringing it as just simply a to establish the position of the Chachamim that a Rava is halacha Moshe Mesinai. So I'm not going to spend too much time with them, especially the first one, Esther Natias. Now, it happens to be that in terms of coincidence, the fact that we're learning about Esther Natias today, it's rather amazing. So what is the halacha of Esther Natias? So we know that for the Shemitah year, so you're not allowed to work the land, right? There's an Isser of being being choresh and katzir, of plowing the land and planting and harvesting. Okay, or basically we have to the requirement of the Torah is to give the land a year of rest, what you and I call Shemitah. So we also know, Rashi brings down, we have a drasha, that not only do we have to rest on the Shemitah year, but we have to be mosif, we have to add. Just like by Shabbos, there is a requirement to be mosif onto Shabbos, to add onto Shabbos. So too, by the Shemitah year, we have to add on as well. How much do we have to add on to the Shemitah year? Meaning that we have to stop doing avoda, not on Rosh Hashanah. Shemitah year starts on the Rosh Hashanah. So that means now we just finished Rosh Chodesh Elul. So that means that in just a little less than a month from now, so we're going to be starting the Shemitah year. So to be mosif means that you have to add on. How much you have to add on? So Rashi over here points out, I'm just highlighting some of the basic points of Rashi. So Rashi over here points out that you have to add on an additional month, min ha-Torah. So that means to say already by Rosh Chodesh Elul, so there is a mitzvah to stop doing avoda in the Sada, and to observe Shemitah already a month in advance. So what is Esther Natias? And this part already is where we're getting really deep into the weeds, and with the pun intended. But I'm not going to go through that. That midrabanan, the Chachamim even added and extended it even further. So back to Shavuos, and again, I'm not going to, the additional Hosafa, which was added by the Chachamim, you could see Rashi over here, where Rashi takes this even further back. For a stay Lavan, it goes back to Pesach. For an older tree, it goes back to Shavuos. Good. If you understood that, great. And if not, that's a lot of details, which we don't have to go through right now. But just to understand the basic idea of Esther Natias. So saplings, obviously, if I plant a sapling right before the Shemitah year, so the sapling obviously is a really young tree and it needs a lot of additional attention in general. And so therefore, the halacha l'moshe Mesinai tells me that if I have a 10 sapling trees that are grown in a field of 50 by 50 amos, and it is evenly spaced out in that area, so what the allowance is that you're allowed to work not only directly underneath the sapling trees, but you're allowed to work that entire area of land, that swath of land underneath that area, all the way up to Rosh Hashanah. Meaning that for that particular area, so we have a halacha l'moshe Mesinai that you don't have to be mosif, and you can work that land right up until Rosh Hashanah. Good. That's the halacha of Esther Natios. Again, there's a lot more details, but for our purposes right now, that's just the basic idea of Esther Natios. It happens to be also, again, just a fantastic coincidence, is that we are now approaching, we are on the threshold of a Shemitah year. So it really just works out coincidentally. Now, in terms of what people do nowadays in terms of the Shemitah year, so that is it's a much lengthier discussion in terms of how nowadays what the minhag is. Nowadays, the observance of Shemitah is not midaraisa, it's midrabanan. So therefore, there are just simply more allowances that are allowed. Again, not our discussion for today, but I just mentioned it. Number two, a Rava. The second of the halacha l'moshe Mesinai is a Rava, which we've already clarified. So that is a special mitzvah, a Rava of being makif es ha-mizbech, surrounding the mizbech with aravos. Again, we're going to do more details of that later in the Masechta. And finally, nisuch hamayim. Nisuch hamayim for the 7 days of Sukkos. So not only do we do nisuch with yain, which is standard, with every carbon there is nesach yain that comes along with it, libations of wine. But on Sukkos, in addition to that, there's also nisuch hamayim. Water is poured onto the mizbech as well. Later in the Masechta, we're going to go over this in much greater detail. So we will hold off on any more details until we get to later in the Masechta. But in the meantime, however, where do I find Nisuch HaMayim in the Torah? The answer is you're not going to find in the Torah. Okay, later in the Masechta, it happens to be that there will be an encryption, meaning some fine remuzim in the Torah for the mitzvah of Nisuch HaMayim. But you just read the Chumash from cover to cover. You're not going to find Nisuch HaMayim in the Torah. And it's a mitzvah in the Torah, but it's not a mitzvah in the Torah. It's a mitzvah of halacha Moshe Mesinai. It's one of the halachas that were directly given from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe, But no record of that in the Torah itself. Good. That's our Masorah. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the discussion of the mitzvah of Rava as it relates to the Mizbech. Machlokas Tanaim, according to Abishol, it's actually merumas in the pasuk of Arvei Nachal. And according to the Chachamim, there is no remez in the pasuk. And according to the Chachamim, it's simply Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. Tana Rabbanan, we're continuing in the Gemara. We are on Lamed Alamed Aleph. We are four, five lines down from the top of the Amud. So over here in the Brisa, so we know that the Aravas that grow by the river, so that is an Arava, meaning that qualifies as the Arava that we use for the Dal Minim, but Safsafa, which grows exclusively by the mountains, so they are excluded. It's a different species. It's a whole different min. I'm Rabbi Zera Maikra, and now Rabbi Zera says, what pasuk would indicate that Safsafa is something which is inferior, meaning it's not only a different species, it's an inferior species. So we can actually see that, we can actually see that in the pasuk in Yechezkel. The pasuk says, Kach amayim rabim, Safsafa sama. So it's a difficult pasuk, and basically the Navi is giving tochacha to the Jewish people, and basically the idea is, the Gemara is going to spell this out, but I'll say it right now. The idea is that what I expected is that you were going to grow into a Rava, which is of a superior quality. And meanwhile, what happened is that you grew into Tzavtzefa, which is an inferior quality. That's the Navi giving Tochacha to the Jewish people. So Amalei Abai V'Dilma Purusha Kamefaresh. And Abai says, I don't know, maybe we can offer the following pshat. Kach HaMayim Rabim U'mayni U'Tzavtzefa. That maybe what grows by the Mayim Rabim is Tzavtzefa. So the Gemara says, no. Imkei Mai Samo. No, you have to read the Pasuk and you have to really be medayik in the wording of the Pasuk. It says, you became Tzavtzefa. So that means to say that was unexpected, meaning I expected something else, i.e. a Rava, and meanwhile you became Tzavtzefa. Am Rabbi Abba Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Amarti Sheyisrael Lefana Kekach Amayim Rabim. And here's where the Gemara really spells it out. Rabbi Abba says that what my Kadosh Baruch Hu is saying to the Jewish people via the Navi Yechezkel is that what I expected you to do was become a Rava, my new a Rava. Vein Samu Atzman Kitzavtzefa Shebaharim. And meanwhile they turned into this inferior species, they turned into Tzavtzefa. Now, now, some have a different formatting. We're going to go over the same information. It's just that the formatting is going to be a little bit different. So over here in the Brisa, so the Brisa contains the Drasha. And it's Rabbi Zera who's asking the question in terms of, well, maybe it's just pshat. Maybe the Navi's telling us that Tzavtzefa is actually modifying what is Almayim Rabim. So, Kach Almayim Rabim, my new Tzavtzefa. No, Imke, my Samo. So, then if that's true, then how do you deal with the word Samo? Meaning it sounds like Tzavtzefa ended up becoming a substitution of what should have been there. Am Rabbi Abba Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Ani Amarti. Shi Yehu Yisrael Lefana Kekach Almayim Rabim. Umay Niyu Harava Behein Samo Atzma Ketzavtzefa Shebaharim. And then Rabbi Abba goes on to explain what we already said in terms of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu expected us to become and what unfortunately we became. Okay, same. It's the same information, just formatted a little bit differently. Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara continues with another brisa. Ezu Arava Ve'ezu Tzavtzefa. So now we know that there are two species of willows. There's the Arava, which is kosher for the mitzvah of Dal Minim, and there's Tzavtzefa, which is not kosher. So how do we identify? So the Gemara is going to give us three different ways to identify what makes an Arava versus what makes it Tzavtzefa. So Arava, Kaneshala Adom. So number one, by the Arava, you're going to see a red stem. V'aleshala Mashoch. On top of that, the leaf is going to be elongated. Upia Chalak. And what you're going to find is by the edge, it's going to be smooth. Tzavtzefa, now when it comes to the Tzavtzefa, Kaneshala Lavan, the stem is going to be white. V'aleshala Agol. The leaf is going to be round. Upia Domala Magal. And the edge of the leaf is going to have serrations. So the Gemara says, well, we do have a Brisa, and the Brisa says that if it is like a sickle, it would be kasher, but if it's like a saw, it's going to be pasul. And Rashi over here spends a good amount of time going over the shape of the sickle, the shape of the saw, and the serrations of the sickle, the serrations of the saw. To say it briefly, Rashi points out that the sickle, the serrations are all pointing in one direction by the saw. The serrations are pointing in both directions. But regardless. So, but what comes out over here is something which is troubling because we said that when it comes to the a Rava, so we're expecting it to be smooth. And meanwhile, the Bryce over here is describing that even with a serration, as long as it's Doma Lamagal, it's going to be kosher. So that's difficult. Amar Abai, Kitanya Hi, Bichofa Gila. So Abai says that this Bryce over here was talking about a particular subspecies of the Arava, right? Chilfa Gila. Chilfa Gila is a particular subspecies. So it's a type of Arava. And in terms of the edge of it, so it is Domla Magal. So it looks like a saw. The but when it comes to all other Arava, so we, the expectation is that its side is smooth and not serrated. Good. So the which really now begs the question, meaning that what we just learned together is that there is a variation of a kosher arava that has a serrated edge. So then it's going to be a little bit challenging because the Braisa gave us three telltale signs of what is an arava, three telltale signs in terms of what is the non-kosher tzavtzafa, and now it really begs the question. Do I need all three of them in order to be kosher? The answer seems to be clearly no. Do I need all three of them in order for it to be pasul? And what, in other words, what becomes critical, what becomes not critical? Okay, that obviously that needs more examination, more clarification. We're going to go on. Just pointing out what needs a lot more what needs a much deeper dive. But with the we're going to go on. Amar Abai, Shma Mina, Hay Chilfa Gila, Kashalo Shana. So Abai says, good. So what did we just conclude together? That the Chilfa Gila, so that in fact would be good for the Oshana. Oshana is a term that we've been using now in this parak numerous times. The Oshana is just basically a way to describe the bundle, meaning that when I have Lulav, Hadasim, and Aravos, so the whole bundle together is now called Hoshana. So we can take the Gila Chilfa, the Chilfa Gila, and we could use it for the Oshana. We just established that it's kosher. So Pshita, the Gemara says, okay, but, right, we knew that already, right? So the Gemara says, not necessarily. I might have thought that since it is a special subspecies, so maybe the Torah doesn't want me to use that. Maybe the Torah wants me to use the generic. So alone is kosher, therefore it shouldn't be kosher. So Kamash Malan, the Chiddush is that no, that this Chilfa Gila is in fact going to be kosher. The Gemara says, wait 1 second. That was just a fantastic Havamina. The idea that the Torah only wants me to bring the generic, and any time that you have a subspecies, it's no good. So the Gemara says, no, Arvei Nachal Amar Rachmanu Mikol Makom. The Arvei Nachal, the plural language used in the Torah, is there to tell me that not only is the generic willow going to be good, the generic Arava is going to be good, but any subspecies. Now, as far as Tzavtzafa is concerned, so it's a whole different species, meaning the Tzavtzafa is not even a subspecies. The Tzavtzafa is a whole different type. As we already pointed out, it's an inferior type, but it's a whole different type. And therefore, the Tzavtzafa is no good. But this Chilfa Gila is considered, it's viewed as a subspecies within the Arava. Good. So that basically takes us to the end of the Sugya of Arava. So now what we've established is that we have now markers in terms of identifying what would be considered a kosher Arava, what would not be considered a kosher Arava, and numerous drushas that we generated from the pasuk of Arvei Nachal. The Gemara now just has like an end note before we get to the next Mishnah. Amar Rav Chisda. So since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so names have changed. And it gets confusing because in three areas, so the names get flipped around, and you should just know that for whatever reason, I don't have any explanation why, but the what, however, is very clear. And that is the names got changed. What once upon a time was called the Arava is now referred to as the Chalafta. And what was once called the Chalafta is now called the Arava. Again, I'm not here to tell you why. I don't know why. But Rav Chis was pointing out, but it changed. So in other words, so when you go to the market and you're looking now for a kosher Arava, so what you have to ask for now is you have to ask for the Chalafta. Because that's what people call now the kosher Arava. They call it the Chalafta. Now, once upon a time, the Chalafta, that was the Tzavtzafa. That was not kosher. Good, Rav Chis said, but once the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, the names got flipped. And so now you're looking for a kosher Arava. Make sure to use the word Chalafta. Okay, right? For us, we call the Arava, or Willow, but or whatever. There was a Tkufa, clearly, where the names have changed. So Chalafta, Arafta, Arafta, Chalafta. My Nafka Mina Lulav. So the Gemara says, good. And now, obviously, what practically means that when you put in your order, so make sure to click on Chalafta, because that's what you want nowadays. meaning because nowadays we call the, what was once called the Arava is now called the Chalafta, so you have to make sure you click on Chalafta. Now, Shipur, Chatzotzra, Chatzotzra, Shipura. Okay, there are numerous types of shofros, so some are bent and some are straight. So, generally speaking, in the good old days, before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the shofar is the bent horn. And the Chatzotzra, that's a straight horn. And so, So on Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara in the fourth paragraph of Rosh Hashanah teaches us that for Rosh Hashanah we want a bent horn, right? We also want it from the aisle, but that's not absolutely necessary. But we want the bent, right? That's the Gemara's conclusion over there in the fourth paragraph of Rosh Hashanah. And so nowadays, when you're in the market and you're looking for a bent horn, so don't ask for the word shofar, because since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so what was once referred to as a shofar now described as a chatzotzos. Okay, and so again, it flipped, and so you got to make sure that you're asking for the right type of horn, which would nowadays, meaning post Beis HaMikdash, would be called the chatzotra. So my nafkamin al shofar shofar Rosh Hashanah. Good. And peturta. Okay, one is referring to a large table, the other one's referring to a small table. And again, since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it got flipped. Again, I don't know why, but that's the reality. It got flipped. So lamai nafkamin al mekach umemkar. So that means to say that if you contracted with somebody that you're going to buy a peturta, so don't expect to receive, right? I'm assuming the peturta before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed was a smaller one. I may be wrong about that. Hopefully I'm right. But regardless, in other words, know that it's flipped. So that make sure now that when you contracted to buy the peturta, so expect now it to be the large one, not the small one. Okay. And if it's not a large one, so then you can claim it's a mekach tzos. Okay. So those are the three terms that got flipped but post Chorban Beis HaMikdash. For whatever reason, the Gemara doesn't explain why, neither does Rashi, but it got flipped. And we need to know that information. Amar Abai Afani Omer Beikasi, Hovlila, Hovlila Beikasi. So Abai says also, another two terms that got flipped is the second and third stomach of a ruminating animal. In Chulin, we did this in fantastic detail. And here, we're not going to be doing this in fantastic detail because it's not really the main topic of today's daf. But in a ruminating animal, so you have first the rumen, that's the keres. And then you have three stomachs that follow the main stomach of the animal, right? The basic osis, the hovlila, and you have the keva, right? The keva is the most exciting one. That's part of the manas kahuna. But anyway, in the third paragraph of Chulin, so what we did in great detail is we went over what would render the animal a trefa if, in fact, one of these stomachs got punctured. Now, it happens to be that the basic osis, so it is a double-lined stomach. So if a needle goes and penetrates one of the linings, the animal would not be a trefa because you have that second lining. So make sure that when you are describing the second and third stomach, so originally the second stomach was called the Beis HaKosos, and the third stomach was called the Hovlila, but for whatever reason, again, not here to give reasons, but the names got flipped. Now, it happens to be a funny flip, by the way, because As the Gemara there explained, so the Beis HaKosos is called the Beis HaKosos because the interior of the interior lining looks like cups that are situated one next to another. So it's kind of strange that the names got flipped around. Okay, but as strange as it is, so according to Abaye, that happened. So what we now describe as the Beis HaKosos actually is the Hovlila. So lamai nafkamin lamachan animsa ba'ove Beis HaKosos. And you need to know this information because if you were told that a needle penetrated, so you need to know which stomach we're talking about. The second stomach, so it's a thicker lining, it's a double lining. The third stomach does not have that double lining. And so that's why it's important to know which stomach we're describing. Ama Rava Bar Yosef, Afani Omer Bava Bursa, Bursa Bava. And Rava's gonna now add a fifth term or two terms that got flipped around. What was once called Bavel is now Borsif, and what was once called Borsif is now called Bavel. Lamai Nafkamina, the Gemara says, why is that important information? What practical halacha does that share with us? And that is Lamai Nafkamina Legitei Nashim. So as Rashi over here points out, what we're going to do in a minute is just quickly summarize the first four blot of Gittin. When a get is delivered, Mimedina Sayam, when it comes from outside of Eretz Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, so it must be done where the shliach says, b'fanei nechta, b'fanei nechta. It was written in front of me, and it was signed in front of me as well. So why does the shliach need to say those words? And if he does not say those words, the get is not going to be a kasha get. So the Gemara over there gives two reasons why that should be. One is because he's verifying the document. meaning that the document needs to be verified. It needs to go through a process of called what's called kiyum shtaros. And over here, a shliach is going to verify. Yes, it's true. Normally, you need two to verify a document, but a leniency was granted so that he could verify the document himself. All right. If you have people who are signing on the get from out of town, and we're probably not going to see them, so it would be very hard, very difficult to find the original signers of the document. So therefore, we're allowing the shliach to verify the document. It's kiyum shtaros. That's one possibility. The other possibility of why it's so critical to say b'fanei nechtam, is because the outside of Eretz Yisrael, they're not b'nei Torah. They just simply they don't have proficiency in halacha, and they might not write the get l'shma. And when we receive the get, we have literally no idea. Meaning the requirement to write the get l'shma, so that's a kavana. That's just simply an intention when you write the get. And we don't know that was written l'shma or not. So when the shliach says b'fanei nechtam, so that is an indication that the get was written l'shma. So the Gemara over there goes and points out, this is now taking us to Daf Vav in Gittin, that when a get is delivered from Bavel, so there's no need to say b'fanei nechtam, because both of the concerns are non-issue when the get is coming from Bavel. Why? Because number one, in Bavel, they're B'nai Torah, so they know how to write a Lishma. And number two, there was always traffic between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael. So if it's a question of getting verification of the signatures, either we'll get the two principal signers of the document, or we'll get another group of people who recognize the signatures. So we're not concerned for either one of the issues. And when a get comes in from Bavel, so you don't have to say b'fanei nechtam. So meanwhile, what was once called Bavel now is referred to as Borsif, and what was once was Borsif and now called Bavel. So that means that this dispensation, that when a get is delivered from Bavel, so after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, it's no longer Bavel, it's Borsif now that is afforded this dispensation, not Bavel, because the names got flipped. Okay, good. Again, that's all tangential, interesting, but tangential, and now we just finished with a Rava. Now, the expectation, of course, is that we're up to the Esrog, so the next Mishnah should be Esrog. But it's not. As we're going to see, for reasons which I'm not sure why, so the Mishnah over here is going to interject in terms of the number of each of the minim that need to be brought. So, as we know, so the in terms of an Esrog, one Esrog. Lulav, one Lulav. Hadassim, three. Aravas, two. But as we're going to learn together in our Mishnah, not everyone agrees to those numbers. And even if you do agree to those numbers, where do those numbers come from? So that's what we're going to be discussing over the course of the next sugya. Okay, it would seem like this Mishnah should be after the Dal Minim. It's not clear to me why it is that this Mishnah comes up right over here. But anyway, okay, we're doing the Mishnah. So according to Shitas Rabbi Yishmael, it would be three Adasim, two Aravos, one Lulav, one Esrog. Now, according to Rabbi Yishmael, of the hadasim, so two of them could have their tops of the heads of the hadas clipped, and that would be fine. But one of them has to be an unclipped hadas. The Gemara is going to ask the obvious question: well, if the unclipped hadas is kosher, so why shouldn't all three of them be allowed to be clipped? Okay, the Gemara is going to ask that question. Rabbi Tarfon Omer Afilu Shoshim Ketumim. According to Shitas Rabbi Tarfon, even if all three of them are clipped, that would be fine. Rabbi Akiva Omer Kishem Shalulav Echad V'Esrog Echad Kach Hadas Echad V'Arava Achas. According to Shitas Rabbi Akiva, the Lulav is one, so with the Esrog, so with the Hadas, and so with the Arava. Good. So Shitas Rabbi Akiva is that it's one of each and that's it. So Tanya, the Gemara quotes a Braisa, and the Braisa over here is going to go through the same information, just a little bit more detail. Rabbi Yishmael Amar Pri Eitz Hadar Achas. So that by virtue of the fact that when the Torah describes the Esrog, it says Pri, which means a fruit. So since it says it in the singular, so therefore it is simply but one. Kapos Tamarim Acha Echad. So as it relates to Lulav, it's also one. Now, how do we get to one? So as we've said already numerous times, Rashi reminds us over here. So even though it says Kapos, which pronounced, it's in the plural, but by virtue of the fact that it's malay, sorry, it's chaser, it's missing the vav, so therefore we understand it to be one. Anaf etzavos shlosha, anaf etzavos brings us to three. Now, how do we get from anaf etzavos to the number three? So Rashi over here writes that it's because there are three words. Anaf is one, etz is one, and avos is one, so it gets us to three hadasim. Now, that pshat of Rashi is a difficult pshat in Rashi, and Tosfos points out. It also says pri etz hadar, which is also 1, 2, 3, it's three words. So how come by the anaf etz avos, it's understood that that is three words, therefore three hadasim, and meanwhile by pri etz hadar, it's only one? Okay, Tosfos tries to give an answer. Anyway, admittedly, it's a difficult drasha, but the Gemara, that's Rashi's understanding of the Gemara. Arve nachal shtayim. So, and arve nachal is two. Now that's easy, because the word arve is in the plural. Now I know on the Amud Aleph of today's daf, we went through various interpretations of what we get from the fact that the Torah says the words arve. And it's interesting because earlier this daf, if you would have asked the question, why does it say in the plural? So the answer would have been, well, it's to include aravos that not only grow by the nachal, but even aravos that grow elsewhere, even aravos that grow by the mountains. And meanwhile, on the Amud Beis of today's daf, well, the question was asked, why does the Torah say the word arve? Oh, because arve is plural, and I need two aravos. Because again, we always work with a conservative view of the plural, right? The smallest plural, of course, is two, and that's why we need two. So it does sound like, in today's daf, at least to me, it's confusing in terms of what the arve, what the plural of arve is trying to generate. But, okay, be that as it may, that's the drushas according to Rabbi Yishmael. Now, v'afilu shalem ketum v'echad sheino ketum. And over here, now we're back to the hadasim for Rabbi Yishmael. Two of them can be clipped and one of them has to be unclipped. Rabbi Tarfon Amar shlosha v'afilu shloshem ketumim. And according to Rabbi Tarfon, even if all three of them are clipped, that would be fine. Now, in terms of an explanation, Rabbi Tarfon, so Rashi says something, Rashi says something interesting, and that is that the reason why you can have the tops of the hadasim clipped is because by the hadasim, they don't need to be hadar. That is Rashi's understanding of Shitas Rabbi Tarfon. Now, that, of course, is interesting because how is it that by the hadas, there doesn't need to be, a requirement of hadar. Meaning, the assumption is, we said this in the beginning of the perek, that by the esrog, the Torah says priates hadar. And the way Tosfos understood it, admittedly, Rashi didn't understand it this way, but the way Tosfos understood it is just like the priates hadar has to have a status of hadar, so too the other three minim as well. Lulav, hadasim, and aravos also need to be hadar as well. And so for Rabbi Tarfon, it's a little bit difficult to understand how the hadas gets waived of this requirement of hadar, and meanwhile, the lulav and the arava still have to be hadar. Okay, so I don't have a wonderful explanation, but that is Rashi's understanding of Rabbi Tarfon. And Rabbi Kiva omer kashem shel lulav echad ve'esrog echad kachadas echad ve'arava achas. So good. And Shitas Rabbi Kiva, which we saw in our Mishnah, but here in the Brisa doesn't elaborate on Shitas Rabbi Kiva, but according to Rabbi Kiva, it's one of each. Amal Rabbi Elazar yachol ye esrogimahem ba'aguda achas. So Rabbi Elazar says, look, we know that it has to be bundled together. The lulav, hadasim, and aravas have to be bundled together, but not with the esrog. Meaning you're holding the esrog with them, but they don't have to be bundled all together. Now, how do I know that? So Amar v'chi nemar priyetz hadar v'kapos tamarim, because if you read the Torah and read it carefully, here's what the Torah does not say. The Torah does not say priyetz hadar v'kapos tamarim. It doesn't have the vav hachibor connecting the esrog to the lulav. V'alolo nemar ela kapos tamarim. The Torah says priyetz hadar, and we'll just pause for a moment. Then kapos tamarim, and then the next two minim, vi anaf etzavos, vi arve nachal. So the vava chibor is connecting the lulav with the hadasim and the aravos. But the esrog is not connected, which means to say that they don't get bundled together with the lulav. Now, despite the fact that they are not bundled together with the lulav, they still have to be held with the lulav. That's the next point of the brisa. Uminayin shemakvin zedzeh, how do I know that they hold each other back, meaning the mitzvah is not going to be fulfilled until you have all four. So tamalamar ulekachtem shetei lekichatama. So the lekachtem is coming to teach me that they have to be, they all have to be there, held together. Even though in terms of the aguda, the esrog is kept separate from the other three, but in terms of having to be there, they become essential towards the mitzvah. Okay, in a moment we're gonna go back and we're gonna analyze the Shita Rabbi Shmuel. But just over here, just to highlight a really important discussion, it comes out from our Gemara right now that in order to fulfill the mitzvah, you need all four. Okay, a point that we made at the beginning of the perek, right? If you go back to my short introduction to the third perek, so it's the Rambam counts the mitzvah. So if Dalamin counts as one mitzvah, And the reason why is because of ma'akiv zeh. In other words, if you have three of the four minim, so you simply don't have the mitzvah. The mitzvah demands, it requires that you have all four minim. Okay, that we've already established. What our Gemara just told us is that the ma'akiv zeh. Now, in order to fulfill the mitzvah, what does that mean? Does it mean that I have to be holding them all simultaneously, or does it just simply mean that they have to all be present? I don't have to pick them up all at the same time, but they all must be present. Interestingly enough, right here on our daf in Tosfos, Divrei Maskal, Shetei L'Kichatama, so the Rishonim debate this very important issue. Tosfos over here quotes the Shita of the Bahag, right? You could see right in the middle of the Tosfos, Divrei Maskal, Shetei L'Kichatama, Upirsh Be'alachas Gedolos, Eima Akvin, the low tema ad the mag balu bahade adade ella e mag be kochavachad luchude shabridami the kaimalan lulav ain't sarach eged. So the Bahag writes that you don't have to pick them up all at the same time, meaning sufficient that you pick each one of them up. You need all four, meaning the Gemara's point of being ma'akev is that you need all four, but all four don't have to be picked up at the very same time. And how do I know that, says the Bahag? Because our conclusion is that lulav ain't zarcheged. They don't have to be bound together. Remember, machlokas between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim that we went over a couple times in our perek. Now, the conclusion is that we don't pass like Rav Yehuda, but rather we pass like the Chachamim, lulav ain't zarcheged. Now, as a result of that, so the Bahag arrives at the conclusion that because they don't need to be bound together, therefore they don't have to be picked up together. You do have to pick up all four, just not all four at the same time. That is the Bahag's understanding of our Gemara. And which I didn't do, in other words, this is a shorter version of the discussion, is go through the Gemara Menachos. You could see a little bit earlier in Tosfos, he does go through the Gemara Menachos where it sounds like this is a correct pshat. Rabbeinu Tam is shocked by such a pshat. You could see Tosfos goes on, he quotes the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, in order to be Mekayim the Mitzvah of Dalaminim, you must pick all four of them up at the same time. Right? Like we're no Haig. Rabbeinu Tam says that to pick it up one after another is not a kiyum ha-mitzvah, despite the fact that Rabbeinu Tam agrees with the Bahag that there's no obligation of being oge them together. Yes, lichatchila we bundle them together as hider of zekeli vanveu. He agrees with the Bahag that there's no absolute requirement that the lula be ne'egad. But nevertheless, you have to pick them up at the same time. As far as how Rabbi Natam reads our Gemara and reads the Gemara in Menachos, so see Tosfos for more discussion on this, right, really an exciting and important topic that comes up in today's daf. Let's go back to the Gemara. Rabbi Yishmael al-Manafshak. Now, the Shita Rabbi Yishmael, where two of the dasim can be clipped and one of them can be, one has to be unclipped. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Manafshak. Ish lemen bai namikulo. So I don't understand. If the requirement that the hadas has to be shalem, so all three have to be shalem. So in ilo by shlemim, and now if there's no requirement of the hadas being shalem, so afilu chad namilo. So then why does one need to be shalem? It doesn't make sense. So amr bira, amr rabbi, ami chazabur rabbi shmal. So the Gemara explains that according to Rabbi Shmal, he was chazabur, meaning that by virtue of the fact that originally he thought that all three of them required to be unclipped, they all have to be shalem. But then he was chozer. He recanted from his position, and he says that no, the truth of the matter is that I don't need all three of them to be clipped, i.e., only one of them has to be shalem, i.e., I only need one hadas. That's the way Rashi's understanding how Rabbi Shmuel recanted from his position. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Rabbi Shmuel, halachic Rabbi Tarfon. Now, as far as halach is concerned, so the Gemara Pasim is like Rabbi Tarfon, that when it comes to the hadas, it doesn't have to be shalem, meaning the hadas can have a clipped top, and that would be fine. So Rabbi Yehuda Mishmol says that the halacha, in fact, follows like Rabbi Tarfon. Now the Gemara says, Shmuel here is consistent. Shmuel warned the sellers of the hadasim, Ashvu Vizvinu. Look, I know what happens on Sukkos. Obviously, the demand for hadasim are really strong. The demand for all dalminim are really strong. And there is a concern that when you have such a high demand, so it allows a seller to gouge the prices. And what Shmuel wanted to make sure is that there was no price gouging that goes on in the markets. So he says to the sellers, you must make sure that you sell at reasonable prices. And if you don't do that, derishna l'chul k'Rabbi Tarfon. So I'm going to tell everyone that the halacha falls like Rabbi Tarfon. Now, it's a threat. Now, it's a little bit unclear in terms of why it's a threat. Meaning, if in fact Shmuel does in fact pass like Rabbi Tarfon, which he does, so why is he threatening the sellers that he's going to tell people that the halacha follows like Rabbi Tarfon, meaning he actually believes the halacha follows like Rabbi Tarfon. So it's a little bit unclear in the Gemara why he's telling the sellers, here's what I'm going to tell the people, when meanwhile, he'd be fine telling the people. So my time, Elam Mishum to make of Lidger Shluhu Rabbi Akiva to make old trade. Now the Gemara wonders that if he's trying to threaten the sellers, so why doesn't he give him a better argument or a better threat? And that would be a passing like Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara says Tilta Ketum Shchicha Chad Velo Katum Lo Shchiach, because even though Rabbi Akiva requires only one, but the one has to be shalem. It is easier to find three that are not shalem than to find one that's shalem. And so the better threat would be that the halacha falls like Rabbi Tarfon. Good. That was the, what Shmuel warned the sellers. But the Gemara's assumption is that in fact, he does fall like Rabbi Tarfon. And that's why he was very comfortable in telling the sellers that, look, I'm gonna go public with the fact that the halacha falls like Rabbi Tarfon. Good. Adkan. Okay. Let's just quickly recap. We're gonna stop here. Tomorrow we start with Esra. Right? It's a better place to start. Tomorrow we'll start fresh with the fourth of the Dalaminim. In the meantime, however, just as a quick recap of today's daf. So today we focused on the Arava. In the Mishnah we started with An, Lamigimel, Mudbeis, taught us, what are the general psulim that are true by all the other minim and true by Arava. And specifically, what is specific to Arava, notably, what an Arava is going to look like, the shape of the Arava, and another variety of Arava that's no good, that's Saftifa. The Tzavtifa is another variation of the Arava, but it's a different species altogether, and therefore it's going to be pasul. Good. And the Gemara opened up with Arve Nachal. What drushas do we get from the fact that the Torah uses it, Lashon Rabim? Numerous drushas, notably, doesn't matter where the Arava grows, even though the Torah says Arve Nachal, but it can grow by the mountains and that would be fine. Also, according to Abishal, encrypted in the word Arve is a reference to the mitzvah, not only of the Arava as it relates to the Dalminim, but the Arava as it relates to the mitzvah of being makif es hamizbeach, which we're going to discuss later in the Masechta. Now the Chachamim don't agree with Abishal. The Chachamim say that Arava as it relates to the mizbeach, that's halacha Moshe Mitzinai. We went through this morning three halacha Moshe Mitzinai that are grouped together. Esther Netios, Arava, Nisuch Hamayim. We went through all three of them in some detail in terms of what they are. And then the Gemara went through more details in terms of what is the Arava as opposed to what's the Tzavtzifa. What are the telltale markers in terms of identifying which one is which? The Gemara concluded its discussion regarding Arava in terms of nowadays after the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, if you want to order Arava, make sure to click on Chalafta. Because nowadays, what was once called the Chalafta, which was once called the Arava, is now called the Chalafta. And other terms that got flipped around post-Chorban Beis HaMikdash. The Mishnah on Lamed Amud Beis, so it taught us about numbers. How many of the Minim do I need to bring? Machlokas HaTanayim. So we go with the Shita Rabbi Shmuel. Interesting that we go follow Rabbi Shmuel over that of Rabbi Akiva, but that's the Halacha. That for the Lulav and the Esrog, it's one each. For the Aravas, it's two, and for the Hadassim, it's going to be three. Machlokas in the Mishnah, whether or not the Hadassim need to be Shalem, or whether they're allowed to be Ketumim, and Machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Tarfon, and ultimately the Gemara says, Shmuel says that the Halacha in fact falls like Rabbi Tarfon, that by the Hadassim, they can be Ketumim, they can be clipped. It sounds like from a Gemara, that as a Hidr, as a Lechatchila, one should try to find Hadassim that are not clipped on the top, but b'di'evit, by the Hadassim, they are, in fact, can be clipped. Interesting Rashi, which I didn't really give a good pshat in, but Rashi says that the reason why the Hadassim can be clipped on the top is because the Hadass does not have a requirement of Hadar. That's how Rashi says it. Okay, that certainly is it's that last Rashi in the Mishnah that makes the point. So, and certainly, right, needs an explanation in terms of why that should be. And finally, the last thing that I just want to review is a very fundamental machlokes that we saw in Tosfos. The Gemara says that the Dalamin Minim are Ma'akev Ze'ezeh. I need all four of them. And then a discussion amongst the Rishonim. Do I need all four of them? That I know. Do I need to pick up all four of them at the same time in order to fulfill the mitzvah? So Rabbeinu Tam says, yes, absolutely. And the Bahag says no. Right? And historically, by the way, the Bahag came before Rabbeinu Tam. The Bahag says no. The Bahag says they just have to be all held, but not at the same time. Afilu Ze'ach Ze'ach. It would be acceptable to fulfill the mitzvah of Dalaminim in that manner.